On this episode of The Edge Podcast, Robin Mee, president and founder of Mee Derby, joins ClearEdge CEO Leslie Vickery for an in-depth conversation on why staffing firms need a strategic hiring and training plan, how recruiting technology solutions are impacting the industry, and the importance of finding your true, authentic voice. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome, everyone. This is Leslie Vickery, the CEO and founder of ClearEdge Marketing. I am here on today's Edge podcast with my guest, Robin Mee, who is president and founder of Mee Derby. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you, Leslie. Thank you so much for inviting me to participate in the Edge podcast.
Of course. We're super excited to have you. I first met you several years ago over breakfast, actually, at Executive Forum, thanks to our mutual good friend, Liam McKelvey with Bullhorn. And now, fast forward, we're actually judges together for the Bullhorn Bullseye Award. So it is fantastic to have you on our podcast today, and we'll just go ahead and dive right in. So you started Mee Derby nearly 30 years ago, and I've actually heard you say this, and I've read it about you as well, that the real thread of your career has been putting people to work. What did you do before Mee Derby, and how did you find your way into the staffing industry?
So I have been involved with putting people to work for my entire career, and it started summers in college. And for 3 years after that, I worked and eventually I ran the Summer Youth Employment Program in Fairfax County, Virginia. This was a program that employed hundreds of disadvantaged youth for the 10-week summer period. They were low-income teens between the ages of 14 and 21 years old. And just like in staffing, we recruited them this through area local high schools. We developed jobs, we placed them in nonprofits and government organizations. The funding was through the Department of Labor, specifically the CETA program, the Comprehensive Education Training Act. And we also did a pilot project that employed deaf students through Gallaudet University. And eventually, I wanted to work in private industry and kind of went from public sector staffing into private industry staffing. And I found my first job through ADECO, well, at ADECO, then Adia, working for the iconic Peter Yesny, who went on to found Staffing Industry Analysts. And what Peter did is he had a company called Word Processors Personnel Service, and he sold it to Adia, and I was his first hire after the sale to expand the brand nationally. I opened up the Washington, D.C. office, both search and contract. And here I am, many years later.
So I learned something new about you today. And you know you're iconic when there's actually an award named after you. And Peter Yesny obviously has the award in his name. That said, I didn't realize that that's how you got your start in the industry and working with him. So thank you for sharing that story. And honestly, Robin, I feel like most people in the industry have heard of you and or Mee Derby. I know some people from your team from back in the Spherion days, and you've really done a wonderful job of building your brand. And I feel like every single list that is in our industry, you and or your company is a part of. So it could be the Staffing 100 to the Global Power 100 Women in Staffing, ASA's Volunteer of the Year Award, Best Staffing Firms from Inovero, and more. So that said, there could be some people listening who are not familiar with Mee Derby. So why don't you share why you started the company, the type of companies you work with, and perhaps your sweet spot role-wise?
So I always had a burning desire to be an entrepreneur. I come from a family of entrepreneurs going way back. I was an early manager in my career. I've always had a lot of energy and a lot of passion for whatever it was I was doing. And after 7 years in the industry, I, like many people that I've come to know since, lost my job in an acquisition. It was hard, but it turned out to be a gift. It didn't feel like it at the time. And I took 3 months of really hardcore introspection and interviewing and planning and scheming to decide to start my own search firm. That was 30 years ago. This December, we're celebrating our 30th anniversary. And Nike at the time had just come out with its Just Do It campaign. I knew I could always get a job, but just do it became one of the things that ran through my head during this 3-month period of deciding that I was going to start my company. I decided to just do it, and within 2 months decided to specialize in search for the staffing industry. I had worked with a search firm when I was trying to make my decision, and it just seemed like a natural of combining my love of the industry with my interest in search. And 100% of what Me Derby's business has been and is today is search for the staffing industry and the workforce solutions industry. So if you look at the SIA staffing ecosystem, that is the Me Derby business, with recruiting and staffing at the core of the ecosystem, but then all kinds of services around, including VMS, MSP, you name it, anything that's related to staffing and workforce solutions is where we work. Our staffing clients are, it's national, the business is national. We work from startups to multinational, you know, giants of our industry across every vertical, and there is a vertical, there's a staffing company out there for every job imaginable. Those are our clients, and we place primarily at the management and executive levels. So I've got a team of 8, so there are 9 of us total, plus we use some offshore sourcing, which adds to that number. We're celebrating 30 years of search for staffing. I think that we've established ourselves as a leader in our space, but it wouldn't be possible without this, first of all, amazing group of colleagues that I've got internal to my company. The people I work with every day at Me Derby are extraordinary. And we're so lucky to have this amazing industry that has grown significantly with no end in sight. It makes up this staffing community that I have committed my entire career to.
It's and I'm right there with you. It's interesting. We're both now kind of considered vendors to the industry, so to speak. However, you're actually doing with the staffing side exactly what the staffing companies get. So you have an even deeper understanding of what they do day to day. And there's just something about you and your team that's so welcoming, I have to say, in general, just working with you. So you've done, like I said, a really nice job talent-wise, but also building your brand is very approachable and helpful, and not always necessarily looking for that sale, looking to help people and then hoping that it'll kind of come around to that, I'm sure, one day. But I always feel confident when working with you. I have to ask you a question, because something that we struggle with, we're often asked from our clients on the retention side and even recruiting side as it comes to sales and recruiting roles. They just feel like they need more all the time, and they're constantly backfilling them. So there's really no secret, I guess, in our industry that entry-level sales and recruiting roles have a high turnover rate for companies. I've even heard some companies turning over upwards of, gosh, this high, 70 to 80% of their staff during first year of employment. We actually put out an executive pain point study, and we found that internal hiring and ramp up times for sales reps are a direct link to challenges with sales growth. So not only is the high turnover impacting the company from a just pure turnover standpoint of recruiting this talent, it's impacting the growth of a company. And I love a quote Eric Gregg gave us. He's, as you know, the CEO and founder of Inovero. He had this to say: what is better than onboarding salespeople faster, not having to onboard as many? Executives point to sales hiring and onboarding as critical issues limiting their sales growth, but if you want to outpace the industry, especially your competitors, you must look at sales staff retention as key to sustained growth. I'd really love your take on this issue and what you believe staffing firms should do to ensure stronger hires and more retention, or perhaps the challenge runs deeper. Maybe you could share your insights on that.
So this is a huge pain point for all size companies, from, again, startups to the multi-global firms. There's 2 entry points into our industry. So it's either as a salesperson or as a recruiter. And I would suggest that we see more entering as recruiters and then developing their careers from there. More and more companies are hiring recent college grads and training them more than ever before. And I really applaud and appreciate that approach. Look at the success of the Allegis Group. They kind of were the of early entry into that being their hiring model. And all the companies that have been spurred from them have also taken that model as how they have, their commitment to talent acquisition, that's how they've grown. So I've been very involved with the American Staffing Association's initiative, Staffing as a Career. And I firmly believe that we as an industry must hire from outside the industry. We can't rely on hiring just people with industry experience. And that initiative talks about and advocates both the recent college grad, but also hiring mid-level career professionals from other industries. We have to train. We have to train whether we hire, no matter who we hire. This is the most amazing business. We impact the most one of the most important pillars of anyone's life. And but we haven't cracked this one, right? 70 to 80% turnover, and I've heard those same numbers. Sales used to be the main way that people elevated in our industry, but it's not true anymore, with recruiting and delivering having never been more important. And it's complicated. And we're seeing recruiting leadership having its own career path in ways that didn't exist even 10 years ago, both recruiting and sourcing leadership. Sourcing is a whole nother, you know, a whole nother avenue. But there are a variety of ways to attract and deploy the talent that we need. But the core element of our work is still the same, and that is that we impact the lives of people one job at a time. So I'm a big advocate that staffing companies need to have a strategic plan on hiring and training their internal talent. We need executives who understand that internal hires are the most important tool in their toolbox. Look at Joyce Russell, who is president of ADECA North America, who you recently interviewed for this podcast series. And she lives the mantra and spends upwards of 60% of her time in supporting her team, being with her team, and making sure she has the right people in the right seats. And you need an internal TA strategy. You need a leader that's got a vision like Joyce to execute. And this is not an afterthought. This is a strategic initiative. And companies of all levels need the strategic initiative on hires. So I'm going to advocate a couple things. So here's the checklist. Create a talent acquisition strategy, and have not only do you have to have the leadership like Joyce supporting it, but you need to hire a strong talent acquisition leader internally and fund that as a division. And then you're going to, once the strategy's in place, I think that companies will hire better and they'll hire smarter. And they'll have a combination of both rookies and experienced talent, because you do need, in my opinion, a combination of the two. Along with that, you'll invest in world-class education and training. You'll create a culture of learning. As a matter of fact, I just saw a report this week that ASA put out. They were giving they're going to be giving some awards for companies who have got world-class training as part of their, you know, company culture. And then once you've got those people in place, you're going to engage them, you're going to support them, and you know, I know everybody, each individual is motivated by different things, but most people are motivated when they are engaged and feel supported. I'm a huge advocate of considering current retention strategies, maybe suggesting that companies think outside their box, but you know, we're reading and you're seeing that studies express. Employment has done one recently on, you know, what do people want, and flexibility turns out to be number one on every one of these lists. And that's something that, you know, we in the industry, companies in the industry, that word flexibility has not really been in our lexicon. So I think that we all need to be thinking outside the box to crack this one.
I agree. And to your point, if you're a small and medium-sized company, and often we'll hear, well, our strategy is to hire from the companies who invest so much in training, which then they hire these people in who maybe come from the large companies who do training, and then they don't offer them ongoing training. And they just expect that they're going to perform well, whether that be, you know, in a manager role, leadership role, and as they grow throughout their career, somehow that training just gets left off the table. And what's interesting is the industry as a whole has recognize that companies don't invest a lot in training, and even associations offer it, whether it's TechServe Alliance or ASA offering training for various roles and functions without companies that can supplement, don't necessarily need to replace, but supplement for companies who maybe don't have a big budget to have someone on staff. But I couldn't agree more. It's so critical to the role and retention overall. So with that, I'm going to shift gears for a minute here, Robin. And we published an ebook featuring women from the Global 100 staffing list and asked this question. If you were giving a commencement speech, what would be your final thoughts? And of course, you have made this list a couple few times. You answered that question, live your most authentic life and know that it will change over time. Work hard to make good decisions, find your unique voice, build community, invest in relationships, find balance, stay healthy and active, and be grateful. Something that stood out to me in that statement, in particular with all of the work we do for women in recruitment and through ARA with women in technology, is that a lot of women struggle to find their voice, having that confidence to speak up. And something I've always admired about you is how outspoken you are and how much you help others by almost giving them a voice. So I'm going to tell a quick story that's very personal, but I think important to share with the audience. And I don't know if you remember one of the first times we met, Robin. We were standing with a group of executives at a conference welcome reception, and apparently there was a pool party being hosted by one of the sponsors immediately following. And in front of everyone, as part of a group conversation, so it's you, myself, and several other people, a CEO, a male CEO of a large staffing firm, turned to me and said, "Hey, Leslie, will you be wearing a bikini to the pool party?" And I stood there pretty much with my mouth hanging wide open in shock. I had no idea how to react to it. It was just so uncomfortable and inappropriate. And by the way, this wasn't that long ago, but I have to say something you did, you stepped right in without hesitation. You had my back and you said something. You looked directly into the eyes of the CEO and said something. It was a see it, say it kind of moment. His comment, again, it was completely inappropriate. It was super uncomfortable for me and probably those around, but you used your voice to stand up for what you knew was right. And there are plenty of see it, say it moments we all can learn from. And after the fact, of course, you know, you go back and you think, gosh, I wish I would have said this, or I could have said this and have the best comeback ever. Today, I have a much stronger voice going forward. I've built a lot of confidence in my role and my position in the industry and among, you know, women and helping on the topic of diversity and inclusion. But at the time, I was really intimidated by the situation. What advice do you have for others who struggle to perhaps be as confident or use their voice, whether in a situation like the one I described, or it could be during a key meeting or even asking for a promotion?
I think that over time, if we pay attention, we learn how to access our voices. I think that finding our voice is a process. And it begins with observing those around us, our environments. Like you, Leslie, I heard you say in one of your podcasts that you had a powerful mom for a role model. And my mom was a civil rights advocate, and she worked in the staffing industry for Westaf in the 60s. And then later in her career, she worked for the Department of Labor for the Office of Contract Compliance, and she did glass ceiling reviews for Fortune 100 companies to ensure that women and minorities were in the C-suite, which we know that's a real lacking area. So for me, I've mentioned I'm a lifetime learner. Anybody that knows me knows that I'm constantly talking about learning from my mistakes. I've learned when to speak up, and sometimes by mistake, I've learned when not to speak up. And I've learned that the language that we use is incredibly important. I try really hard to use positive language, even when dealing in difficult situations. I find the more that I do it, the easier it gets. And I do want to, you know, I'm committed to living an authentic life, and figuring out what that means to me is this, you know, lifetime challenge. But who we surround ourselves with is key, both personally and professionally. Being direct and honest and transparent are really important key personal values to me. But it takes practice. Like, finding your voice takes practice. It takes making mistakes, learning from those mistakes. I'm an advocate of creating a peer group, or, you know, mentors or friend mentors, and use those friends to bounce ideas off of, to figure out where to go for what you need. And I've done that over the course of my career. When I first started out, you know, I did splits with other companies because I needed colleagues. Now I bounce ideas off my team. I've got a group of professional friends, and that group changes all the time. I mean, you go to different people for different things. I might even call and ask a client a question, or, you know, ask for some time to bounce something off of them. I mean, it takes a willingness to put yourself out there, a willingness to be introspective, take some chutzpah. I think that, and I think and I hope that this generation of women coming up now will speak up in greater numbers and with greater ease. And I think that those of us doing it now is helpful. And just like you're describing, in a group of people, speaking up allows other people and gives other people the license to also speak up in other situations. And we see examples in our cultural, you know, world and our political world right this minute of people speaking up in ways that they've never done before, and women speaking up and women being supportive of those women speaking up like I've never seen before.
I think you're right. The more people can see us speaking up, the better it is for both men and women to speak up, and the more they'll learn that that's okay. And you know what? I've had some tough lessons too lately. Sometimes when you speak up, you make a decision in your mind before you do it. And you know, sometimes you're taking a risk in doing it. And sometimes, like I have been, you are willing to take that risk and do it.
Sometimes in the example that you gave, it's at the spur of the moment and you don't have time to think it through. Other times when you're talking about advocating for a raise or for a promotion, you have an opportunity to think about it ahead of time. And, you know, those are really strategic conversations. And those are the ones that you can use your mentors or your friends to bounce the idea off of, or even role play it before being in that meeting. And I'm a true believer of doing that.
That's a really good point. Role playing is critical. I like it. Okay, very good. Something else that stands out to me about MeDerby is your business model being virtual. It's very similar to our model. We have an office in Chicago. However, most of our 40 plus team are virtual because we hire for the talent, not necessarily location, and our clients are all over the world. So it doesn't really matter where we're delivering from. That said, you've said the most defining experience of MeDerby was evolving from a traditional office environment to a virtual company. This promotes a great work-life balance, fosters collaboration, fuels great work, and results in record growth. Lessons: surround yourself with great people, take risks, always be learning, show your team candidates in the industry that you care. So more and more companies are becoming flexible. And to your point earlier, one of the top pieces of criteria in hiring that candidates are asking for is flexibility. So companies are becoming flexible in their approach to how they run a company, with not everyone needing to be in the same office or even at an office at all. So I've actually heard from a lot of hiring managers as well that that is the top of the list in the past few years. And I really shudder to think I see some costs associated with this of all the, you know, the larger staffing companies, about all the overhead that goes into offices and lease space that in a lot of cases isn't even being used because people are working remotely. That said, my question for you is, are you seeing companies more flexible when it comes to the executive level related to geography? In other words, is having a headquarters becoming a thing of the past and focus more on talent versus location? And does this perhaps in any way open the door for more diversity in the C-suite?
So I think this is really dependent on the hiring company. HQ is not a thing of the past at all. And my flexible model is still the exception rather than the rule, that staffing has not easily embraced the virtual office. And they have not even readily accepted flexible work schedules, which is surprising, but you know, some companies are still really caught in that traditional paradigm. There are certain, like, okay, so I see executives and senior managers, and I see mid-level managers and senior sales executives traveling extensively. And sometimes it can be 30 to 70% of their time. So it does become less critical to be in a specific location. However, I find that for those C-level employees, they've got to have FaceTime in HQ. And so they are more often required to relocate if they don't live in that geography. Or they could, and I do see companies allowing 4 days a week in HQ and 1 day a week from home. Maybe at some point they're spending 3 days in HQ. Often those individuals are doing a lot of client meetings and just general meetings. But I'm working on a search right now that is requiring providing no flexibility to that COO. They need that person to relocate if they're not in the geography. And so what's going to happen is the candidate is going to take an apartment in that town and commute back and forth between their home and where the office is. So I would like to tell you that there is more focus on talent versus location, but I just don't think we're there yet. And I don't think this opens doors for diversity in the C-suite. I think that's a whole nother topic.
Got it. It's interesting because I am working with a lot of companies right now. We are as an agency where the executive team, they are able to live where they want, but they just travel in. So They may still have that HQ or that office, but where they live is the flexible piece. And then it's up to the executive to be willing to make that travel as they need to. And quite frankly, depending on their role, most of them are traveling all the time anyway. So I do think we'll start seeing a change. You're right. In our industry, it is hard not to have people together in an office, but there seems to be a slight evolution. I think the people entering it today who are demanding such flexibility may drive that even more 5 to 10 years down the road from today. So, okay, speaking of diversity, you are part of a small but powerful group of women executives in our industry. We actually did a quick study and found within the top 50 staffing companies, the C-suite is 73% men compared to 32% women. We have a lot of women in sales and recruiting roles and mid-management, but somehow that number shifts when you reach the senior ranks. You're actually helping to recruit for a lot of executive roles. So I guess I'd love your opinion on why there aren't more women in the C-suite within our industry when we have so many within the industry itself. Are they not putting themselves up for the role, not willing to take risks or be their own champion? It could be a lot of things, and I realize it isn't one simple answer per se. But as someone working on those roles and experience in the C-suite firsthand, I'd love to hear your perspective.
So I actually think the biggest problem is that women aren't sponsored like men when it comes to moving into the C-suite. Mentored maybe, but they're not pulled in and pulled up. The good news is in 30 years, I cannot tell you of a time that I have seen either gender bias or gender discrimination or even gender wage disparity in the thousands upon thousands of people that I have interviewed or that we have interviewed or that we have placed. And so that's great news. The bad news is those are embarrassing, abysmal numbers. And how do we improve upon them? Is such a huge question. So I think that in the staffing industry, there are many women executives, and I think unfortunately more of them. If we did this part of the research, I bet we'd find more women executives at companies they have started or that they are part of a family legacy. They might be second generation owners of that company or owners managers. But we have a lot of women entrepreneurs in our industry. We don't have enough women leaders that are at the true executive ranks. And whether, you know, this is a direct, if there's a direct relationship here, I don't know, but TrueBlue did an interesting study on this subject and found that women at the branch management level were exiting the industry at higher percentages than men, citing family reasons. And that contributed to having less women to promote into senior roles. Now, that said, these numbers tell a sad story. And I think staff, in my opinion, I would like to see staffing firms make a goal of hiring more women in executive roles. I think both ASA and SAA have done a good job of getting women in leadership into our collective conversation. And what, you know, we do get searches that our clients will say they would like to see more gender diversity. They want to see gender diversity. But then when it comes to the actual, you know, reviewing candidates, they're not giving any preferential treatment or any treatment at all or consideration to a female candidate over a male candidate. And I think over time this shift will happen. I think that and this is anecdotal, I think there are more women staying in the industry, not leaving the industry because of family. I think we're going to see like a significant shift in this. But I will tell you that I think we've got big shifts. We've got big problems in these female executive numbers, but I think we have bigger problems of where I do see the biggest areas for problems are is that we have such little ethnic diversity and we see fairly rampant age discrimination. And I mean, across every size company, I'm seeing age discrimination in ways that I find deeply concerning. And what I mean by that is sometimes I'll hear companies say they want candidates of a certain age. More often they will say that they want candidates with a certain amount of or a short amount of tenure. I want somebody with 3 to 5 years of work experience. I want someone with 5 to 10 years of work experience or no more than 15 years of work experience. You may as well be saying, I want somebody of a very specific age. And this is it's such a huge red flag and it is blatant and it's everywhere. And I would like to, you know, that again, just like diversity, that's a whole nother big conversation. So to answer the question, I think the biggest problem is that women are not sponsored like men when it comes to moving into the C-suite. And I want to thank you, Leslie, for all that you've done. As I mentioned, I think ASA and SA are doing a good job of getting women in leadership into our collective conversation. But you've done a tremendous amount in highlighting women in leadership. You founded ARA, if I'm saying that correctly, in 2013.
Yes.
promoting women in technology leadership. And this podcast series featuring women in recruitment is just another example of your leadership and your contribution to this conversation.
Oh, thank you, Robin. I appreciate that. We do spend a lot of time on the topic because it's something we're passionate about just based on our own experiences and what we see in the industry. And your point on overall diversity is spot on. We actually have done a couple of articles on the topic of ageism, and I, as of late, have seen it quite often, actually, with senior executives leaving companies and trying to find new jobs, and they're really, really struggling because they're right at that age of could be early retirement age and having some issues. So as of late, I'm actually seeing it quite a bit more as well. And I do feel like that flexible piece as it relates to women, if you think about it, we're raising up all of these executives and the companies as branch managers, regional management, and they're working at those kind of local levels and they're growing up in the companies and they're there for so many years. But to get promoted to the C-suite, they have to move potentially to where the company HQ is. Mm-hmm. By not being flexible, and if it's a woman, you know, statistics, this isn't me just saying this, show that men are more likely to move oftentimes than even women, and that we have a support system in place. You know, I have a great support system here in Chicago for our son, Grayson. You know, the thought of picking up and moving can be a struggle and challenging for some people. So we're telling them either you need to leave the industry or you need to move, offering them that sense of flexibility, even travel could potentially be something to consider as well. But having that champion and someone to bring you up, I know Jesse Gonther from Allegis is a fantastic example of that. And she's had men in their company help her throughout her career. Now, she has a great voice. She stands up for herself and she asks for, you know, different opportunities and make sure it's clear what she's interested in, which it has to go both ways. You have to have that voice for yourself and be your own champion first. That said, she's blessed by having a lot of people help her with that. So I agree with you wholeheartedly in that case. So speaking of role models and champions in our industry, you are a role model to many, including myself. I always love talking with you and learning so much about what you're up to and just stories across the industry and asking for help or advice or feedback. And most recently, Robin, you went really way out of your way to make sure I met Joyce Russell during Bullhorn Engage. You set up a lunch hoping she could make it. You made sure at the award ceremony, because we were there prepping and Joyce was there prepping for her keynote, that we were to meet. And it's something you did not have to do at all. You just felt compelled to help. I didn't even have to say anything. You just did it. What motivates you as a leader, and what influences have others had on you to kind of help shape that leadership style?
So I'm a natural connector, and I'm intrinsically motivated to create community. And, you know, that's what this industry is all about. I've created community both inside my work and in my personal life. And it's definitely, we talk about a thread of putting people to work. This thread of building community is very relevant to me. I'm so thankful that I found this industry. My major influences, I've talked about several of them here, you know, my mom, Peter Yesney, my colleagues, my, you know, these people that I get to work with as clients and candidates, and it's really all this community. But I think the combination of the American Staffing Association and staffing industry analysts and those people that make up those organizations, and then those organizations and everything that they provide, the education, the opportunities for public speaking and involvement and writing and blogging, and just the ways that we all get to interact together because of them, and the professional that I've become. I knew really early in my career, I was starting a small company, but I needed to be part of something bigger than myself. And Peter used to preach, you know, you get out what you put in. And I really took that to heart and became this active volunteer at ASA. And those two organizations, in addition to this, you know, huge community or as part of this huge community, are what inspire me and have absolutely shaped my leadership style.
There's a lot of debate around the role of staffing and recruiters. So just in a quick answer, if you can, as it relates to the industry talking about technology coming along to automate various parts of the role, and obviously you're in the space as well and working with staffing clients to staff their business, do you feel like the role of technology in our industry is creating a bit of uncertainty? I guess, what is your take on the value of technology that it's presenting to us, and should we be worried that the relationship factor will simply go away?
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of thinking about this also and talking about it. You know, we all thought the job boards were going to do away with our industry, and they didn't. They enhanced it. Look at us today. And our LinkedIn, right? We thought LinkedIn was going to do away with our industry, but again, it's only enhanced it. I think as owner-operators, we have to stay on top of what technologies are going to aid our organizations. But I don't think the relationship is going away at all. I know in my business, executive search, the relationship is critical to our success. But there are other pieces that we have to automate. And the earlier, as an owner, I've got to be on top of what technology is out there. I've got to think really strategically about what I can. It's almost like outsourcing pieces, right? I'm not going to outsource the relationship, but I can outsource marketing automation and recruiting to some degree. I mean, I'm looking to automation to help fill the candidate pipeline with qualified and interested candidates. And I've got to stay on top of those tools that are going to help my organization be competitive and successful. so that we can automate the pieces that make sense to automate and retain the ones that we can't, that are critical to our organization's success. So I think that we're in a transformational time, and I think that automation will and is transforming our industry, but it doesn't look like this is a people business, and I think we're always going to need people. The jobs are going to evolve and morph and change, but that is not changing. So embrace the technology, figure out what technology your organization needs, and if you can be, as a small business person, if you can be ahead of it, a little bit ahead of it, it is advantageous. We were super fortunate to make a great investment in Bullhorn in 2002. And as a result, we've had a lot of technology, not just the Bullhorn ATS, but all of the technology they bring through the marketplace and through Engage. And, it's been able to feed and provide support to this small search firm. But it's allowed us to stay technology aware and slightly ahead of the curve.
I personally think we're in the best possible industry. Every company needs talent. It's one of the top issues that they have is finding talent and retaining talent. And technology is the way of the world right now. If we can have the best of both, there's, in my mind, no better place to be. Okay, so that said, I'm going to end and put you on the spot here, Robin. And this always makes me nervous because I never know what someone's going to say, but tell us one thing, just one thing that we don't already know about you that others may find surprising.
Okay, so I talked about my mom, but what I didn't tell you and what very few people know is that after she retired from that Department of Labor career, she worked for MeDerby as an executive recruiter for 7 years.
Really?
And she, yes, it will always be a wonderful thing for both of us and for my company. She used her maiden name, Irene Nichols. And we did not share with people outside of the company that she was my mom. In retrospect, what I came to find out is that I was destined to be in this industry. She was not only she worked for this Westaf franchise in the 60s, but then her farmer dad wanted to bankroll her to start her own staffing company. But she didn't want to be in business with him. And so she ended up following her own path. And then I get in this industry and she works for me later. I mean, it's just, this big circle that we create. So that's my story.
I love it. It's a beautiful story. Thank you so much, Robin. It was an absolute pleasure to have you on The Edge. And I'm sure people would love to get in touch with you. So tell us how they can reach you.
Best thing to do is go to my website. It's mederby.com, and you'll find a contact information for myself and all my team under the contact us. About the team and then contact us. I'm robin@mederby.com, and my phone number is 301-263-2663, extension 1. And thank you, Leslie.
Thanks for listening to this week's The Edge episode. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. And you can also email me at etatum@clearedgemarketing.com. And let me know if you have any questions or if you want to hear about anything in particular as it relates to our Women in Staffing series or our marketing episodes. So just shoot me an email and I look forward to connecting with you. Thank you.